Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Jeremiah chapter 19, which I will call The Broken Jar. In my last audio, I said I was going to call it The Broken Flask, but I was using the ESV translation, which is a terrible translation in my humble opinion. It's a clay jar, a clay pot that is going to break. Now, Jeremiah is speaking sometime during the reign of the last kings of Judah. John Gill thinks it's during the times of Zedekiah, the last king who ruled from 597 to 586. And that's as good a guess as any. It doesn't really matter. The subject is the same subject. God is going to destroy Jerusalem because of its idolatry, and he's going to use Babylon to do it, which of course occurred in 586 BC when Babylon came in under Nebuchadnezzar II and burnt the city to the ground. So we begin now in Jeremiah 19, verses 1 through 6. This is what the Lord says. Now, when you see this is what the Lord says, that's a marker that shows that a new prophecy is beginning, a self-contained prophecy. And so God tells Jeremiah, go and buy a clay jar from a potter. Take along some of the elders of the people and of the priest and go out to the valley of Ben-Hinnom near the entrance of the potsherd gate. There proclaim the words I tell you, and say, hear the word of the Lord, O kings of Judah and people of Jerusalem. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Listen, I am going to bring a disaster on this place that will make the ears of everyone who hears of it tingle. For they have forsaken me and made this a place of foreign gods. They have burned sacrifices in it. It's talking about the valley of Ben-Hinnom, a place of foreign gods. So there was idolatry there. There were sacrifices there in the valley of Ben-Hinnom. They have burned sacrifices in it to gods that neither they nor their fathers nor the kings of Judah ever knew, and they have filled this place with the blood of the innocent. They have built the high places of Baal to burn their sons in the fire as offerings to Baal, something I did not command or mention, nor did it enter my mind. So beware, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when people will no longer call this place Topheth or the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, but the Valley of Slaughter. Now at verse 1, Jeremiah is to go buy a clay jar from a potter. Clay jars are very cheap, easy to break. Then Jeremiah is to take some of the elders of the people and the priests, those are the big shots, go out to the valley of Ben-Hinnom. Now, what is the valley of Ben-Hinnom? The Greek for Hinnom is Gehenna. Ben means son of, so it's a valley that belonged to the son of Hinnom at one time. That's where it got its name from. It was used as a refuse site where animal carcasses, waste, and the bodies of criminals were dumped. It's right there at the southern tip of Mount Zion, the southern edge of Jerusalem. The fires were burnt there permanently to keep disease at bay. Sounds like a perfectly hideous place, and that's why Jesus used Gehenna as a metaphor for hell. I like doing that too. For example, I can go to somebody and say, I'm mad as Gehenna at you, and nobody thinks I'm cussing. You can get rid of some of your spleen. You can be a little bit strong, and nobody thinks that you're cussing. It's a great idea. You should try it sometime when you think of somebody who needs to be cussed at. Now, Jeremiah, in verse 2, is told to get into the valley of Ben-Hinnom through the potsherd gate. Now, the Hebrew for potsherd gate is obscure, as the commentator Charles Ellicott tells us. Here's some other translations. American Standard Version, the gate Harsith. Makes it a proper name, the Hebrew. Bible in Basic English, the door of broken pots, Darby, the pottery gate. KJV says the east gate, the Young's Literal Translation says the gate of the pottery. God's Word, NIV, Holman Christian Study Bible, and the New American Bible all say potsherd gate, so that's what we're going to go with. Nobody knows exactly where that gate is. The Septuagint has the gate Karsith, K-H-A-R-S-I-T-H. Which is the same as Harsith, the way the ASV has it. Now, this is what Charles Ellicott says about that. No such gate appears in the topographical descriptions of Nehemiah 2 and 3. And the two gates which led into the valley of Hinnom were the fountain and the dung gate, as told to us in Nehemiah chapter 3. Hence, it has been inferred that this was a small postern gate. A postern gate is a side gate, not a main gate, leading into the valley just at the point where it was filled with rubbish, possibly with broken fragments like those which were now to be added to it by Jeremiah. On this supposition, the connection both of the name of the gate and its use with the symbolism of the prophet's act may have determined the command which was thus given him. In other words, it's a reasonable speculation. The potsherd gate is a gate that hooks you up with the Valley of Hinnom right at the place where there's a bunch of rubbish there. And, of course, one of the main constituents of rubbish back then would be broken clay pots. And so that's where Jeremiah went, to break his clay pot. Continuing with verse 2 of Jeremiah 19, God continues to talk to Jeremiah and says, "Proclaim the words I tell you, and say, Hear the word of the Lord, O kings of Judah." Now we have a problem here. There's only one king at a time in Judah. Why plural? Here are some options to explain that. It's referring to his king and his queen. Option 1, I don't think so. Option number 2, it's referring to the king and his sons, the princes. As the pulpit commentator says, the numerous clan of royal princes, kings by courtesy. In other words, they're told they're kings because they are in the line of succession. Barnes says it's plural because the message of Jeremiah 19 verses 3 through 9 is related not especially to the reigning king, but to the whole royal house. That's option number 2, and I think that's what we're going to go with. That's Barnes. Option number 3, it's plural, kings is plural, because it refers to the king, his sons, and also the nobles. So kings is used in kind of a loose sense. That's option 3. Option 4, this is what Ellicott says. It's referring to the reigning king Jehoiakim, who ruled from 609 to 598, and his heir apparent. Well, that's assuming that Jeremiah is prophesying during the times of Jehoiakim, which nobody knows. John Gill thinks he was prophesying during the reign of Zedekiah. Jehoiakim was 609 to 598, Zedekiah was 597 to 586. Option number 5, the kings are the inhabitants of Jerusalem. This is from Poole, and I think what Poole means is he believes the people were acting haughty as if they were kings. Well, that's sort of off the wall. We're going to take it as the kings and the heir apparent, or the heirs apparent of the king, whoever that king might be, whether it's Jehoiakim or Zedekiah. So Jeremiah, in verse 3, is supposed to say to the kings of Judah, "O kings of Judah and people of Jerusalem, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Listen, I am going to bring a disaster on this place that will make the ears of everyone who hears of it tingle." More doom and gloom from our prophet Jeremiah. "For they have forsaken me and made this a place of foreign gods. They have burned sacrifice in it to gods that neither they nor their fathers nor the kings of Judah ever knew. They have filled this place with the blood of the innocent." Now, what does that phrase, blood of the innocent, mean? Well, it's probably child sacrifices, because the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, the Valley of Topheth, Topheth is probably a place in Ben-Hinnom, or at least a different name for Ben-Hinnom. That was a place where children were burnt to idols. Now, in verse 5, it says that the people of Judah had built the high places of Baal, not Molech, because usually you think of the children being sacrificed to Molech. It's how it's usually referred to. But here, verse 5 says, "They have built the high places of Baal to burn their sons in the fire as offerings to Baal, not Molech." How do we explain that? Well, Baal is often called Molech. According to John Gill, the names being much of the same signification, the one signifying a lord or master, that would be Baal, the other a king, Molech. The pulpit commentary says this word Baal here seems to be used loosely for Moloch or Molech. So we see now, in our minds, the Valley of Ben-Hinnom. There's trash burning there, dead animals, dead human corpses. There's animals being sacrificed on altars to pagan gods. A stinking hell. Perfect description of hell. That's why Jesus called it hell, Gehenna. So God did not command or even mention these gods. Of course he didn't, nor did it enter his mind. Of course it didn't. Now, what that means is it didn't enter his mind as an intention for the Jews to do that. Of course, he knew about it. God knows everything. Verse 6, "So beware, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when people will no longer call this place Topheth or the Valley of Ben-Hinnom." So the Valley of Ben-Hinnom seemed to have two names, Topheth. Let's look at what speculation is about Topheth. The name is possibly derived from the Hebrew. Toph means drum. If the word is derived from that Hebrew word that means drum, Toph, the meaning would be, drums were used to drown out the cries of the children as they were being sacrificed to the pagan idols, Molech, Baal. Or it could be from the Hebrew word toph, which means to burn. Of course, that makes sense because everything's burning in the Valley of Ben-Hinnom. Some people think that Topheth is a specific geographic location within the Valley of Hinnom. Or it could just be another name for the Valley of Hinnom. And as I said, it became a synonym for hell. Topheth did, just as Hinnom was a synonym for hell. But Jeremiah says, we are going to rename this place after Nebuchadnezzar shows up. We're going to call it the Valley of Slaughter, because they're going to be throwing all your dead bodies in there when the Babylonians come and start killing everybody. It's going to fill up this valley, and we're going to call it now the Valley of Slaughter. Jeremiah said the same thing in Jeremiah 7, verse 32. Therefore, take note, days are coming, the Lord's declaration, when this place will no longer be called Topheth in the Valley of Hinnom, but the Valley of Slaughter. Topheth will become a cemetery because there will be no other burial place. Throw in dead bodies into the valley without taking the time to bury them. Pretty much of an indignation for proud Jewish people, but that's what happens in sieges of cities and military disasters. We go down to Jeremiah 19, verses 7 through 9. Jeremiah continues with the speech he is supposed to give. Yahweh is telling him what he's going to say. And we can assume that Jeremiah actually carried this out. In this place I will ruin the plans of Judah and Jerusalem. I will make them fall by the sword before their enemies. In this place means in Gehenna, the valley of Ben-Hinnom, Topheth. I will make them fall by the sword before their enemies at the hands of those who seek their lives. And I will give their carcasses as food to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth. I will devastate this city and make it an object of scorn. All who pass by will be appalled and will scoff because of all of its wounds. I will make them eat the flesh of their sons and daughters, and they will eat one another's flesh during the stress of the siege imposed on them by the enemies who seek their lives. Now in verse 8, Jeremiah says that God is saying that God will make Jerusalem an object of scorn. Now that's sort of a mild way to put it. The American Standard Version has, and I will make this city an astonishment and a hissing. Everyone that passeth thereby shall be astonished and hiss because of all the plagues thereof. Psss. I guess that was a way of showing disgust and scorn and horror. I'm hissing. We don't do that today. We just moan and groan. In verse 9, we see cannibalism is going to be in Jerusalem when the Babylonians come. I will make them eat the flesh of their sons and daughters. Jeremiah talks about that after it actually happened in Lamentations 4, verse 10. The hands of compassionate women have cooked their own children. To be precise, that really should be the hands of formerly compassionate women have cooked their own children. They became their food during the destruction of my dear people. My dear people. Wow. Jeremiah still identifying with his folks, despite how awfully sinful they have become. Object lesson. We need to identify with our American idolatrous, materialist, God-hating fools who have taken over our culture. We need to identify with them. We need to care about them. Now notice in verse 9 is not only the flesh of their sons and daughters, which is horrible, but they will also eat one another's flesh. And I think about that, well, how does that happen? If somebody was trying to eat my flesh, I wouldn't let him do it. Well, it could be. I'm so weak from starvation, I can't stop him. So one neighbor who has become a cannibal will then come attack me, kill me because I'm so weak, and then he'll cook me on the fire and eat me. It's pretty horrible. We go down to Jeremiah 19, verses 10 through 15. God is continuing to tell Jeremiah what to do. Then break the jar while those who go with you are watching. Those who went with Jeremiah were the elders of the people, some political big shots, and priests, some religious big shots. And so God tells Jeremiah, break the jar and say to them, this is what the Lord Almighty says. I will smash this nation and this city just as this potter's jar is smashed and cannot be repaired. Now, Jerusalem could not be repaired at the time of the siege, of course, because it was totally destroyed. But that doesn't mean forever, because it was repaired when Ezra, Nehemiah came back on the return, starting in 538, when the Persians, having beaten the Babylonians the year before, the Persians then gave a decree. Cyrus the Great gave a decree. Cyrus the Great of Persia gave the decree to the Israelites and told them to head back to Jerusalem and repair the temple. So that cannot be repaired. He's not talking about that. He's talking about at the time of its destruction. They will bury the dead at Topheth until there's no more room. I mean, that's a big valley down there. To say that Topheth is going to fill up, that's pretty disastrous. Verse 12, this is what I will do to this place and to those who live here, declares the Lord. I will make this city like Topheth. In other words, I'm going to make this city one vast graveyard. Verse 13, the houses in Jerusalem and those of the kings of Judah will be defiled like this place. Again, kings is plural, probably talking about the king and his sons. They will be defiled like this place. So the royal palace, remember Solomon had his palace next to the temple. It's where the kings lived. All the houses where they burned incense on the roofs to all the starry host and poured out drink offerings to other gods. So we see from this that the people of Judah were carrying out idolatry on their rooftops. Not only were they worshiping Baal and Molech, but also the stars of heaven. Verse 14, Jeremiah then returned from Topheth, where the Lord had sent him to prophesy, and stood in the court of the Lord's temple and said to all the people, that means that Jeremiah has carried out his command, his marching orders from Yahweh, he's broken the pot, pronounced judgment, and then he's gone to the court of the Lord's temple. That's the court of Israel, went through the Gentile gate into the court of Israel. That was the big court where all the Jews could go, both men and women. And Jeremiah said to all the people, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Listen, I am going to bring on this city and the villages around it. Notice, not just Jerusalem, but also the other villages in Judah. Every disaster I pronounced against them because they were stiff-necked and would not listen to my words. You know, if you're an ox and some farmer is trying to put a yoke on you, it's better just to relax and let him put the yoke on you. The yoke will make your burden light because the load that the ox has got to pull is distributed between a neighboring ox who's also under that yoke. So it's a good thing for the ox to have a yoke on his neck. But no, the ox is too stupid, doesn't realize that, and so he stiffens his neck to keep the farmer from putting the yoke on his neck. Likewise, the people of Judah are stiff-necked in the sense that they will not submit themselves to the yoke of Yahweh. They will not listen to his words. So Jeremiah speaks that in the court of the Israelites, where all the people met so everybody could hear. So he spoke to the elders and priests at the valley of Ben Hinnom near the Potsherd Gate, and then he went to the temple back north to Mount Moriah, and he spoke to all the people. So Jeremiah by now has made a name for himself. He is definitely a prophet of doom and gloom, the weeping prophet. Everybody knows it, and he is going to be very, very unpopular. We are now prepared, having finished Jeremiah 19, to go to Jeremiah 20, which I will entitle Jeremiah Persecuted by Pashur. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.